reading of the passion narrative is so powerful that it really overshadows the first two readings. And those first two readings today are important as we begin Holy Week, especially the reading from Philippians chapter 2, verses 6 through 11. What it does, that short passage gives us some insight into the early Christians' understanding of who the person of Jesus was. You know, in the beginning, it wasn't clear, like, okay, Jesus is fully God and fully man. There was all kinds of struggle as the church worked out who the person of Jesus was. And so you had all kinds of different heresies going on in the early church. So it's really amazing by about the year 60 or 70 that we have such a clear articulation of the person of Jesus. And so we hear St. Paul say, though he was in the form of God, Jesus did not deem equality with God something to be grasped at. So the form of God, that's a philosophical notion. It basically means, though he was God, he's fully God. So this is something to be grasped at, that he did not hold on to this. Rather, he took the form of a slave being born in the likeness of man. And not just this, that he suffered death. And because of this, he was highly exalted and raised above every other name, so that at Jesus' name, every knee must bend in the heavens and on the earth. So we have this picture that he was in the form of a servant, the form of man. So he was fully man. So the church already, the early Christians already have this understanding of who Jesus is in a substantial way. And in fact, this passage from Philippians, every priest has spent days studying in Christology class in the seminary. So Christology is the theological study of the person of Jesus. So you spend at least a solid year on that. But this is a very important foundational passage, reference for doctrinal development and understanding of the person of Jesus. What's significant about this, I think, though, is not necessarily just how clear the content is as far as communicating the mystery of the person of Jesus, but the context, because this passage, Philippians 2, 6 through 11, was an ancient hymn that basically St. Paul quoted. So this was a hymn that was being sung by the early Christians. So it wasn't just like a doctrinal statement about the person of Jesus. It was incorporated into their prayer and into their worship through song. And what this message or this framework gives to us is an understanding, maybe a direction in our own worship, that the power of song and hymns are so important. And so as Catholics, it's of the maybe the highest value that we have a greater appreciation for the place of sacred music in our worship. There was a book that came out about 20 years ago called Why Catholics Can't Sing. I don't know where they got that, but there's in the church there's always lots of contention over sacred music. But what this hymn, a reflection upon the Philippians and sacred music can do, I think, for us is maybe enrich our own worship and the way that we relate to God in our Catholic faith, especially during this Holy Week. So when we talk about music, I think there's two really components. One is the melody, and the other side are the lyrics, the content. So the melody has power in itself without even the lyrics or the content. You know, when I was in high school playing football, we were in the locker room. You know, we were playing Queen, We Will Rock You, and I don't know, Iron Maiden. I didn't know any of the lyrics, but I was sure fired up, you know. There was something about the beat, right? And Roman and Greek armies, they had bands that were connected with them as they went into fighting to move them, to energize them. There's a certain melody that works on our feelings and emotions that moves us in a particular direction, right? And you're not going to go into a locker room and hear romantic music, probably, right? But we know that the power of romantic music can move our affections strongly, okay, a romantic and an erotic way, a very intimate way. So, you know, all of those songs by Chicago and Boston in the 80s, right? I shared this with you on another occasion, different homily, that when I was in seminary, there had to be a day where I had to leave all my country music behind because all the country music that I was connected with was all about loving her today. So I had to leave that way of life. And certainly there were things about the lyrics, but it was really, the melody was so powerful on my soul, it moved my affect. Well, think about that in relation to the church and worship. There are certain types of melodies that move our souls in better worship of God and love of God and love of neighbor. And the Second Vatican Council in the 1960s, their document on the sacred liturgy, Sacrosanctum Concilium, said that of the different types of song that are incorporated into worship during the Mass and different liturgies, Gregorian chant has a special place. Not the only place, right? But it has a special place because it's been tried and true over the centuries. So we incorporate some of that, like during the Lent and Advent seasons with the Mysterium Fidei, Sanctus, Agnus Dei. Those are Gregorian chants. And so there's a movement in that chanting that connects the soul with God. Now, there are other types of melody that can be incorporated into worship. Gregorian chant's not the only one, but the point is to recognize that certain types of melody are appropriate for sacred worship. And the Philippians knew that. Okay, they incorporated the content of what they believed about Jesus into song, right? The second part of it, and I appreciate this more now as I'm older, I appreciate the lyrics and the content of music, that there can be incredible meaning. And so I communicated from Philippians 2, 6 through 11, the incredible content, the message that St. Paul was sharing in this hymn, these lyrics. You notice in this letter to the Philippians, there's all kinds of contention in the community. There's fighting, and people are selfish. You know, problems that they had to deal with that we don't have to deal with. That's not true. Okay, and so in verse 5, St. Paul says, put on the mind of Christ. And then he goes through the example of Jesus. Though he was in the form of God, he didn't deem equality with God. So it's a message about have the mind of Christ, be humble, and have a servant's attitude towards one another. So as we kind of move forward and begin this holiest of weeks, reflecting a bit upon the person of Jesus being fully God and fully man, and how those two natures will come out in different ways during the different liturgies of this Holy Week, Holy Thursday, Good Friday, Easter Sunday, to keep in mind that all of the truths that we believe about God are directed towards worship and encounter with God. And that's most fully experienced and known in sacred song or sacred music. You guys all know the saying of St. Augustine, he who sings praise